The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Juno Diaz needs no introduction, so please join me in warmly welcoming him.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Yeah, a pleasure. There's clearly mad seats. Why do they have people upstairs?
To bring them down.
Okay, cool. Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Here we go. Thank you. First of all, Philadelphia and beloved neighbors, thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be back. I want to thank the library, of course, for having me. This library is close to my heart. When I was an undergraduate up the road at Rutgers University, any Rutgers people? What's up? Oh, a clear band, Rutgers people. My undergraduate girlfriend was from Philly, and so when she would go home, I would hide out in this library, yeah, waiting for her. And so a lot of great memories here. All right, so let's do this. Yeah, first things first. Let's kind of get to an agreement. Yeah, you know we're gonna have a signing afterwards. Yeah. So remember, this is the young person's event, young people's event. So the first people to sign are people with children and people who are pregnant. Yes. We're good. We agree with this, yes? Say yes to me.
Yes.
I like word is bond stuff. I'm old-fashioned. Yeah, that's great. Second of all, we also know that this is a children's event. So I normally am an adult writer, and so maybe some people are here because they think I'm an adult writer right now. So if you got some wild-ass adult questions, that's really not for this place, yo. No, I mean it. I've been touring with the book for a little while, and it's been interesting how people who don't have children forget children exist, and they start asking me wild things about, like, why their partner left them. I'm like, no. Deja tu vaina. The next time we meet, we can talk. Are we good with that? Say yes.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. So let's go through. You might not know this about me, but in fact, I find public speaking almost impossible. This is an absolute marker of how well my family trained me to hide my emotions. Yeah. So we're going to go through the usual ritual I go through to kind of calm my hands down. And I already did one part, which I asked who was from Rutgers. Second part, who here is from New Jersey? My beloved state. I'm going to name all the communities I belong to. Yeah. How many folks here are people of color? Nice. How many folks are immigrants? Wow, lesser. Come on, man. Despite what they say, immigrant, that's a joyful condition. It's a joyful condition. Let's try it again. Immigrants? That's right. Yeah. Okay. Anyone in the Latinx, Latina community? Any Caribbeans? Front row. Y'all came early. I'm going to come over here for a little bit. All right. Any people of African descent? We're all on this side. To the right. Love it. All right, and finally, any Dominicans? Nice to hear you. Nice to be here. Three parts of this, right? First thing, how many folks are or are here with young people? Raise your hands. What's up, youth? There's not a lot of us. What happened? What's up with these old people jumping on these seats? Wow. Three parts of this. We're doing this three ways. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about me, who I am, and how I got here. Second, We're going to talk a little bit about the book. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Third, we're going to do questions. Questions. And who's going to ask the questions? Young people. If we have any time, maybe old people will be allowed to ask one or two things. Yeah. But don't be trying to be curvy. All right? So, young people, you have to have some questions for me, man. All right? Don't leave me hanging. So let's begin. First things first, what you need to know. My name is Juno Diaz. A very strange name, in fact. Most people think I'm pronouncing my name wrong. They do. You don't know how many people who speak Spanish try to teach me how to pronounce my name. My name, in fact, is Juno. The T is silent. If you pronounce the T, you're pronouncing my name wrong. Now, here's the deal. Why does my name like that? Well, I'm from an island. I was born on an island where half the people speak French and French Creole, and the other half of the people speak Spanish. And I got a name from the whole island. My first name is a French Haitian last name. It is a last name. If you watch French movies, watch the credits, and you will see about 50 Junos in every movie. It is a common last name. It's like Hernandez. Super common. But for some reason, my parents gave it to me. They seem to have had a Haitian friend who they liked, and I got that name. Now, this is strange. I think my family thought that I would be island unity, right? Both sides of the island. Try to live up to these things. Right? Now, I was born on an island. I was born in this beautiful place where I spent my first 6 years, right? Now, let's take a look. I think there's a way. Oh, is this a clicker? Oh, shoot. Let's see. Yes! Look how cute! Look! That is so cute. I'm mad hair. That's me when I was on the island. For those of you who are old like me, you recognize that as a passport photo. Look how scared I am. Yes. Very, very cute. My mother tells a story about this picture all the time. She has it framed, and anybody who comes in the house and says, "Is that your son?" My mother says, "Yes. Look how cute he was." She says, "He traded his face for his brains." Ma! Yo te quiero! Yes, wild. That, you can barely see if you're in the back, but it's a picture of my mom. She's pregnant with my sister, Maritza. And that's me. You can't tell because it's so far away. But I am wearing a sailor outfit. In those days, you did not have your own cameras. You went to a photography studio, and they would take a photograph of you, and they would have little outfits. It was like cosplay. For some reason, my mom put me in a sailor outfit, even though I've never seen a boat. Now, you can't see, but there's my older brother. He is sitting away from me. What happened? Right before the picture got taken, my older brother punched me. So he was on punishment. But my mom wanted him in the photograph. So that's him. That's me. If you notice my body language, I'm towards my mom. Yeah. So this is what I looked like. Super cute my first 6 years before English. Yeah, now for those of you who don't know this stuff too well, that's my island and my country, and there's New Jersey where I immigrated to when I was 6. Here's the wild thing. When we made this map up, whoever made it, and for once it wasn't me, spelled New Jersey wrong. And for the first week, no adult noticed. Until reading number 7. Some 6-year-old Dominican gal, I checked, raised her hand, and she said, "Why are you misspelling Jersey? Too many E's." So we fixed it. You can't see that, but that's a picture of me in my first year in the United States when I was learning English. There's my brother again. He is hugging me. You can't tell, but we are standing on a little couch that is covered in plastic. We were not supposed to be on that couch, but my mom thought it was cute. And here's the story. My mom loves this picture too, because she says, hey, see that picture? As soon as I took the picture, your brother pushed you off the couch. And what you can't tell is that there's a staircase behind us. My brother tried to throw me down the stairs. He's actually very nice and normal now. But for some reason, he really wanted to be the only son. Yeah. So, what happens? I come to the United States. Who here had to learn English? Yeah, English is tough. Really tough. I didn't like learning English at all. So we come, we're a family of five. And in 6 months, all my other siblings, two brothers and two sisters, can speak English. I can't. It takes me 2 years to speak English. 2 years. I wouldn't say a word of English to anybody. Anybody. It was just hard. But I learned how to read English really fast. My family says that I like to read so much because when you read, nobody can make fun of your accent. Yeah, man. And so I read very fast, but I learned to speak very, very slow. This is part of what got me here. I was obsessed with reading. These are my favorite books. Who here has read The Carrot Seed? Read The Carrot Seed. For real, you'll understand something. And probably in the reading of The Carrot Seed, you'll meet my family. Yeah, my family was the family, if you told them that you were going to do anything, they got scared and said, don't do it. For real. Now, this is my other favorite book, Watership Down. Who's read Watership Down? Yes. If you're under the age of 10, don't read Watership Down. It's a scary book. The rabbits fight all the time. Very scary. But I love that book because the rabbits have to leave their home and travel really far to find a new home. And that seemed very, very familiar to me. Now, if you are an immigrant and your parents figure out that you're kind of smart, they get very excited. Very excited. My mom found out I was good at school, and she was, yes, happy, happy. Why was my mom happy? Yeah, my mom thought I was going to be a doctor. Yes. My mom was like, Dr. Junito, yay! Oh, the summer house was coming. Yes, first class, airplanes. Problem was, I love to read. Problem was, I became a writer. Now I'm 50, super bald, 50, really old, but I still call my mother like a good son's supposed to do. And every time my mother answers the phone, she says my new first name. And my new first name is, I am disappointed in you because you are not a doctor. She says it every time. Y'all think I'm exaggerating. How many of us have immigrant parents this stubborn? Some of us do. My mom, she keeps thinking I'm going to go to med school tomorrow. Now, very quickly, if you love to read and if you love to write, you are in danger of becoming a writer. It's a danger. How many teachers are here? Teachers, you know what the last condition is. What's the last thing that has to happen to you that there's a good chance then you'll become a writer? You have to love to correct your work. How hard is it to teach our students that? Yeah, but I'm nerdy like that, yo. Real nerdy. So I became a writer and not a doctor. And what happens when you become a writer, every young person in your life says the same thing. They say, you're a writer? And I say, yes, I am. And they say, write me a book. And you say, I will write you a book. My goddaughters, Dominicans from the Bronx, said, yo, write me a book. And I said, I will. And they like, because they're from the Bronx, they're smart. They said, promise. And I promised. Damn, write you a book. Now, here's the problem. Young people, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you're fast at it. You can't see. That's my goddaughters when they asked me for the book on the left. They were 7. That's my goddaughters when I finished the book. They're 27. Yes. Yes. They're also disappointed in me. Now, quickly, we're going to do a little bit of Island Born. My book, Island Born, that I wrote for my goddaughters, is about a little girl named Lola. Like me, Lola's from an island. Except Lola left the island and doesn't remember it. She left when she was too young. Now, Lola lives up north in a city. Beautiful city, familiar. Yeah. And she goes to a school where everybody's a newcomer. Everyone's an immigrant. Everyone's from somewhere else. Lola calls it the school of faraway places. One day, her teacher, Miss Obi, comes into class, says, "Students, I want you all to draw a picture of the first place you're from." All the students get really excited. People in the back can't see it. We have Dahlia. She's like, "I'm going to put a pyramid in my picture." Franklin's like, "I'm going to put a canal in my picture." Nelson, who's always yelling, is like, "I'm going to put a mongoose in my picture." Who here has seen a mongoose? Not enough people from Aswa. Yeah. And then there's little Lola. You can't see her. She's a little worried because she can't remember. So she raises her little hand. "Miss, miss, what if you can't remember where you're from? What if you left before you could start remembering?" Miss Obi says, "No problema. Are there people around you who do remember?" "Like my whole neighborhood," Lola says. "And they're always talking about the island." "Well," Miss Obi says, "maybe you should." And then Lola figures it out. "I should talk to them and draw from their memories." So there's the students. They're out in the playground talking about their picture. You see, Nelson's talking about his mongoose, right? Poor little Lola can't remember. She kept trying to remember the island all through the day. To help her focus, she put her fingers on the side of her head, just like her abuela psychic did. So Lola starts asking people. She goes to her cousin Leticia. "Leticia, prima, you have to help me. I can't remember." And Leticia says, "I don't remember a lot either, except for the bats. They were as big as blankets, and they used to chase after me at night." Little Lola takes out her notebook and gets to work. She goes, "Blanket bats," and starts drawing. Then they go to Leticia's brother's barber shop. Oh, no, they run into Miss Bernard, who sells the empanadas. Who here has not eaten empanadas? Don't lie. Some, I know some of y'all mad lying. It's all right. We know who they are. We know who they are, yo. "Miss Bernard, what do you remember about the island?" And Miss Bernard says, "The music. How much music there was. More music than air. And how everyone was always dancing. Even in their sleep, they dance." And here's Lola. You see, all the grown-ups are asleep and dancing. And Lola starts drawing sleep dancing. Then they go to the barbershop with Jonathan. "Jonathan, what do you remember about the island?" "Wepa," Jonathan says. "The agua de coco. How delicious it was." And Mr. Rodriguez, who's getting a cut, says, "Ah, the mangoes that are the size of your head." And this young sister waiting to get her son's haircut, she says, "What I remember about the island is how much color there was." But her son, Grumpy Jr., says, It wasn't all good. It was hot. The sun is on you like five bullies. Then they run into Mr. Meir, the superintendent. Mr. Meir, what do you remember about the island? Nobody cares about that old stuff. Just be glad you live here. Don't listen to him, Leticia says. Keep going and call me later if you need any help. Lola gets into the elevator and puts her fingers on her temple and closes her eyes. Island, she called, like it was a cat. Island. But just like a cat, the island did not come. Then, oh, that phone won't stop, right? Sorry, everybody else is like shutting their phones off. They're like, that isn't me, yo. They go to Abuela. And Abuela's like, oh, what I remember about the island are our beaches. How they are like poetry. And sometimes the dolphins will come out of the water and bow good night. Then in comes Lola's mother. Oh, what I remember was the hurricane that hit the island right after you were born. It was like the biggest, baddest wolf ever. Threw all the houses into the sky. Where were we? Lola said. Where were we? We were hiding under the bed is where we were, her abuela says. That's right, her mother said. And you know what? You never cried once. You were such a brave little girl. I wish I could remember that, Lola said. Well, it happened, her mother says. You might not remember the island, but it remembers you. Then Abuela goes, you know, you should talk to the person who knows the most about the island. Mr. Meir, Lola says. Mr. Meir? Mr. Meir is mad grumpy. Abuela says, don't worry about it. Abuela calls Mrs. Meir. They yell at each other for a bit. Next thing you know, Lola's down visiting the Meirs. Grandmother tells me you've been interviewing people about the island. Yes, sir. It's for a class assignment. What have they told you? Blanket bats, more music than air, fruit that makes you cry, beach poems, and a hurricane like a wolf. I see. So no one has told you about the monster? Lola's eyes got wide. She shook her head no. Even those who don't know, or even those who know, don't always want to talk about him. Our island has always been a beautiful place. It was when I was your age, and it is today. But even the most beautiful places can attract a monster. A long time ago, long before you were born, Lola, that's exactly what happened. A monster fell upon our poor island. It was the most dreadful monster anyone had ever seen. The whole island was terrified, and no one could defeat it. For 30 years, the monster did as it pleased. Lola's curly hair was uncurling with fear. Did you see the monster, Mr. Meir? Yes, all the time. Were you scared? We were all scared. Lola's heart was pounding. So what happened next, Mr. Meir? What should always happen to monsters? Heroes rose up. Strong, smart, young women like you, Lola, and a few strong, smart young men, too. They got tired of being scared, and they fought the monster. What a battle that was. The monster tried all of its evil tricks, but in the end, the heroes found the monster's weakness and banished it forever. Thank you. We'll leave it there. So, we're good. All right. Gang, some young people, if you have any questions for me, I am here for you. Just put your little hand up.
I don't know.
Don't worry about it. College is coming. You'll be great. For real. What do we got, young people? What you thinking about? Oh, here we go.
How many books for children have you made?
Right. This is my first one. So I finished my second one just a little while ago. It's in the hands of my artist. It's more or less about the same family. It's about Lola, except it's Lola, like, I'm going to tell you the worst, like, this is the worst version of what it's about. It's a lot better than I'm about to say. It's more or less Lola wakes up and she finds out she's a little brujita. She's a little witch. So, you know, what would happen if any of your young people woke up with witchy powers? You would be so bad. You'd be a bad little witch. Yeah, so it sounds bad, but it's actually not a bad book. I kind of give it a B. There's a hand all the way in the back.
Do you want to say it together?
What do you want
to
say?
Hold on, gang.
Is the story you wrote a true story?
Oh. Ooh. How old are you? Hi. Too smart. Who are your parents? Stop reading to her. So smart. Is the story I wrote a true story? Yes. Yes, the thing you discover, you're young. When I was really young, I believed in monsters. Then I turned 7 and no longer believed in monsters. Then I turned 15 and believed in monsters. It's weird. Monsters really exist, but most of them are now politicians. They come out of the closet.
How did you become an author?
Thank you. How old are you? I'm going to see you at university. Good ones in Boston and New Jersey. Well, how did I become an author? You know, I don't know. You probably got a really good family, and so they don't put any pressure on you. But when I was little, people were always asking me, what do you want to be? What do you want to be? What do you want to be? What do you want to be all day long? And I didn't know what in the world I wanted to be. All I liked were books. But eventually, you got to answer that question. Eventually, you have to decide what you want to be. And the only thing that I really wanted to be was to spend a lot of time with books. And so I was like, librarian, teacher, writer, bookseller. So I did 3 out of the 4. And I'm a writer and a teacher, and I used to sell books too. I love books. For me, it's any excuse to be around a book. Yeah. Plus, I wanted my own car. So I had to find a job. Young people, what do we got?
How hard was it to write the story?
This one took a long time. You probably could have written this in a month. No, for real. I'm really slow. It took me from the moment I had the idea to the moment I finished it, 2 years. But it took me 20 years to get the idea. I kept coming up with stuff. Like, my whole plan of being a writer is like, it's sort of like when you're taking classes and you're mad at yourself and you get happy with a C, you know? So I just kind of wanted it to be a C, and none of my ideas were good enough. And finally, I got an idea. Yeah, but it took a long time. It took a long time. I threw away a lot of versions. A lot of versions. I wasted a lot of paper. Yeah. Oh, wait, whoa, whoa. Young. How young are you? You're good. You're up. Notice, I checked passports.
Are you planning on ever making a movie on one of your books?
Yeah, thank you. Am I planning on ever making a movie? I keep being asked to make movies and stuff by absolutely no one. So... Yeah, so right now I'm actually working on a, I'm just finishing up a film script for somebody, and if I can finish this film script up in the next week or two, I'm going to try to first work on this novel, and maybe see about TV. Now things are changing. Now, as you know, everyone wants to make money off of us, where before they seemed to think money was about not doing anything with people of color. So things are changing a lot. And so if I can figure out a way to figure out some of these stories, I'll try. Turns out, big shock, for me it's a big shock, it turns out I'm okay at writing scripts. I wrote a script and they were like, this is great. So I felt like, whoa, it took me till I was 50 to discover I had another talent. You know, but we'll see. Well, I mean, my books are pretty much bilingual. The people who speak Spanish would speak Spanish. People who speak English would speak English. And nobody would be happy. Because I know a lot of you don't like reading subtitles. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. Thank you.
Do you want to ask him something? He wants to know what happened to the monster.
Oh, you want to know what happened to the monster? Yeah, well, they chased him into the water. Thing with monsters is monsters are pretty easy to deal with. Yeah? You know, when it comes to monsters, they're scared of the same things. Old people have a word for this, right? Old people call it what? Solidarity. Young people is friendship. If you see a monster, grab some friends. That'll fix it real quick. Yeah, so the monster just went into the water and probably waiting for another election. Yeah. Here we go. Oh no. Super smarty.
My brother wanted to ask you a question.
Okay. Yes, they can ask. Do you want to repeat it, honey?
He wants to know what your favorite superhero is.
Oh, that's easy. That's easy, but very boring. Yeah, I have the most boring superhero taste. Everyone else picks really, really good superheroes. Me, boring. Do you know, you're too young, but for those of us, do you know the Fantastic Four? They're superheroes, but the why they make sense to me is because they're a really messed up family. And it's like my family. If I was going to be a superhero, I was going to be in a crazy family. So there's a superhero in there, right, called The Thing. And he's like a big orange pile of rocks. And so he's boring, but I love The Thing. Yeah. The Thing was an expression of my soul.
Why are they holding hands in the picture?
Yeah, why are they holding hands in the picture? Well, because what I said earlier, when you think about what all monsters' weakness is, monsters don't like friendship. When you're little, you notice monsters don't come out when your friends or your parents or your caretakers are around. Every time I was alone, monsters would come. As soon as I had a friend, monsters wouldn't be there. So I guess I was trying to, with the artist, show that that's what friendship looks like, i.e. solidarity. Yeah, real good against monsters. 100% proof. 100% proof. Yeah. Cool. All right, one more from a young person. What do we got? Oh, yes. You just turned 18. She switched the whole thing up. All right, we've got enough time for a couple of grown-up questions, all right? So here we go. Wait, everybody, calm down. Calm down. No, not that there was that much of excitement. Two hands went up. I'm like a used car salesman. Wait, there's more. So listen, now we have time for adults. Remember adults what I said, but let's do what I've been doing and let's turn the Trump world upside down, right? And let's first hear from women of African descent, right? So, I'm grabbing water. Is there anyone here, a woman of African descent, who has a question?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Asantua Nkrumah Ture. I'm an organizer here in Philadelphia. My question, now that you've written a children's book, how do we talk to children about complicated issues like poverty and hunger and homelessness? Because this year marks the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign. So how do we talk to children about those kind of things?
Thank you. Adults, remember, that question was excellent, but I started getting nervous. Yeah. Remember, adults, Yeah, excellent question. I think we all know the reality, but I think many of us like to deny it. And what is the reality? The reality is children know what the heck is going on. They might not have the words for it, and they might have been socialized to pretend they don't know to save the feelings of adults. But any of us who remember our childhood, if you really pushed in and didn't just accept the little lies that you tell yourself, you know that childhood is all about fear and precarity, even if you are in the most safest, loving family. Because to be a child is to be supremely, exquisitely vulnerable. And most of the reason none of us can remember our childhood very well is because we don't want to remember that profound vulnerability. Children are ready to talk about complex issues with a trusting person, with guidance, and taken, of course, very carefully, right? Because the problem with most adults, myself included, is that when we think about talking about children, we think about depositing in them whatever narrative we have. We don't really think about dialogue. Dialogue means that you can only go as far as your partner. Most adults don't want to dialogue with children. They've got point X and you're going to get point X. Dialogue means that you might have an issue that you're serious about, but that you'll never get to because that child is not ready for it. If you're really interested in covering heavy issues with children, what you must really be interested in is never being able to get to your point. No, and if you're interested in that, you're interested in dialogue. It's only tyrants who insist that you can only do one thing, which is to listen. Yeah? So that's how I do it. I deeply believe in young people's complexity, but I deeply believe in dialogue. So some young children can handle some things at any given moment, and sometimes they're just like, yo, back up, son. You know, I'm trying to deal with, like, the fact I can barely read. I don't want to talk about homeless stuff right now. I got, like, one terror at a time. So that's how I do it. But I think anyone who's loving and patient will discover, as many of the parents here have discovered, that children are the most astonishing interlocutors, and they know. They know. They don't have to be led too far to express how scary it is to live in a society this scary. Adults, remember who we're doing? Women of African descent, calm down. Don't break ranks yet.
Hi.
Hi.
So your previous work has been for an adult audience, and now you're looking at continuing, I think, in this vein with children and making children your audience. So what, I know you made the promise to your goddaughter, but there has to be, or there could be something more there and a reason why you want to speak to a youthful audience as opposed to the adults formerly. What's the reason?
Well, I'm not sure, though, that I appreciate, thank you. I'm not sure I understand this mystery called art. I've never been very good at being an executive artist. In other words, waking up one day and saying, I'm going to write X and write it. That's not me. If that was me, I would have 40 books by now. That's not the way I've ever worked. But apologies for everyone who can work that way. I'm the exact opposite. For me, this tremendous mystery called inspiration, I've never been able to get my fingers around it. I've got a lot of excuses why I wrote this book, my goddaughters, all this stuff. But the real answer is I have no idea why this book came and no other, and why this book came now. I could tell you some suppositions, but I'm not sure that it begins to approach what's really at stake. Ultimately, I do think whether you're writing for young people or you're writing for adults, the real question is, are you keeping faith with your audience? And one challenges oneself. With an adult audience, keeping faith, you can rely on your intelligence. You can rely on tricks of your craft. You can rely on material, right? In other words, you can be like, I'm going to write mad spicy. People love that. I'm going to be like mad lyrical. Teach you, I got bars. Well, funny thing about writing for children is you've got to put down all your tricks. And yet you still have to keep faith. You have to fully bring the best story possible. And so sometimes I think, yeah, I wanted to talk to the younger people in my community deeply. Yeah, I never had children's books when I was growing up. My mom didn't read to us. She didn't come from that background. By the time I learned English, it was too late. You know, by the time I learned to read English, that whole period was gone. I lost what everyone had. And when you're a reader like me, you look at the gaps in the record and you long for a life where maybe you could have had those books. Did I write those books as a way to recuperate that? Lots of answers. But what I've noticed is that it was just as difficult to write a novel as it was to write a children's book, not because of the length, but because there are so many excuses for all of us not to keep faith. Yeah. And it really was humbling how desperate I was to pass B-plus work off as an A, to pretend my audience was dumber than they were so that I didn't have to be smart, to be on the surface so that I didn't have to go into my heart. All the reasons we don't keep faith, but we pretend we do. Why we make promises to people and then we look for any fault in them so we can break that promise and feel good. That's not the way one becomes an artist, not mine. You know, and I am weak. I always want to break faith. So probably the reason I put myself in situations where breaking faith is all the more painful.
I think you answered part of it. I was going to ask, what have been some of the most helpful pieces of advice given to you about writing?
Yeah, thank you. Weird, right? The thing about writing these days is, how many people here are writers? Right? I mean, you know, damn, that was some weak hand showing. Not that, I thought you we were in a lot, but people were kind of like, Weird thing, you probably don't know this, sweetie, but if you go online and you Google advice for writers, there's probably the only thing that has more on the internet than advice for writers are cats. No, man, you would think that we were in the middle of a book battle with another planet, that so much advice for writers was necessary. Wow, you would think every human being was reading 20 books a day, that we would need so much advice for writers. But I've always kept it mad simple because I'm old and I didn't grow up in this period. I always thought being an artist was very straightforward. That's probably why I'm such a bad artist. It takes me so long. But in my simplistic and probably reductive and unhelpful homebrew of advice for an artist, I always kept it simple. I thought the point of being an artist was, A, you just bury yourself in your form. So if you're a writer, you just read. Not that you write, you read. I think most people put it in reverse. They think writing defines them as writers, and they torture themselves to write. I have like kids who are like 14 and 15 being like, I have writer's block. And I'm like, you have writer's block because you've destroyed your joy in writing because you didn't understand that you weren't really supposed to write seriously till you were at least 20. I could take any of you, and if there was a planet B and you wanted to be a dancer and you wanted to be a dancer and have you worry about being a dancer all day and have you just watching dancers, you would be the better dancer because you would be free. Once you torture yourself, you know, it becomes unfree. It becomes something that you expect something from. So I would say read, number one. And then number two, if you really want to be an artist, ultimately what matters about your art is your relationship to the world. Not your credentials. Not how much you've written before you were 17. Show me someone who wrote every day till they were 18 and I will show you someone who pushed their relationship to the world and I will tell you whose art we're still reading 50 years from now. You cannot make up for a profound relationship to the world. If you're interested in being a writer, then into the world you go. And what is the world? The world begins when all narrative ends. What does that mean? The world begins when school ends. Everybody gets a childhood for free. Life really begins when there is no longer any story that explains you. And so you want to be a writer? You want to be an artist? You got to be in the world, lost, miserable, confused. No, it's true, because that's the human condition. Most of my students want to avoid that. What they want to do is they want to just, I want to finish college and then go right to a graduate program, maybe take a year off somewhere, but just a year, not too much. No, I don't want to be in the world. I would leave you with this thought. I would argue that it's not just the collapse of arts education why the average person is so disinterested in arts. It's also because most of our artists have broken the great relationship with the world. And they are as afraid of it as anyone. And therefore, their art is all the weaker for it. It can be beautiful and it can be brilliant and it could be like full of all this genius, but that thing we call the soul, which determines whether a piece of work lives or not, that soul has to be fashioned, has to be forged in the crucible of the world. And so unless you're lost and unless no one cares about you, you're not in the world. That's a tough way to be an artist. And most of us would rather not be that. Most of us are like, yo, that is way too tough. Get me into a program. Get me somewhere where I don't want to have to think for this. And I guarantee you that that's the majority advice. Most people will take that advice and most people will proceed under that banner. And you may join the rest of us who are producing utterly soulless work that no one will ever think about once that page is turned. Yeah, but there's another answer. Get into that world and meet humanity where humanity meets itself. Yeah, and there your writing awaits you. Your art awaits you. I believe that. Yeah, so thank you so much. Oh.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.